Here's a question for you. Why do so many people, maybe even your good selves, believe conspiracy theories? Now, by conspiracy theories, I mean stories like 9/11 being an inside job, or the moon landing being fake, or Princess Diana being the victim of a hit by MI6. Who starts them and why? And are they harmless byproducts of our overinformed age, or something rather more worrying? Dr. Kasim Kassam is a professor of philosophy at the University of Warwick in the UK. In his book titled simply Conspiracy Theories, he looks at the enduring power of myths and also at what distinguishes them from ordinary unanswered questions. To find out more, I welcomed him to Saturday Extra. We should probably start with a definition. Are there ways to distinguish a conspiracy theory? I mean, do they have features in common?
This turns out to be a very difficult question. So I think the simplest view would be to say that a conspiracy theory is just a theory about a conspiracy. So a conspiracy is basically where you have a small group of people working together in secret to do something bad, to put it crudely. And then a conspiracy theory would just be a theory that tries to explain some event by attributing it to a conspiracy. But that's, I think, too broad a definition of conspiracy theory. So if that's what you think a conspiracy theory is, then, you know, if you think that 9/11 was an Al-Qaeda plot, then that makes you a conspiracy theorist. That makes the official account of 9/11 a conspiracy theory. I don't think that's how we actually understand conspiracy theories. We think of conspiracy theories as much more controversial and much more specific than just any old theory about a conspiracy. It seems to me that we need to come up with an account of what a conspiracy theory is that doesn't have the result that pretty much any theory about any group of people working together in secret to do something harmful is a conspiracy theory.
Okay. One of the traits of a conspiracy theory that you're writing about was that they're often amateurish. Now, what do you mean by that?
What I mean is that many of the people who put these theories forward actually don't have any of the relevant specialist knowledge. So here's a nice example. I mean, if you think about conspiracy theories about the Kennedy assassination or about 9/11, many of the most eminent conspiracy theorists about these things are actually philosophers. So they're not, you know, they're not structural engineers. You know, they're not people with specialist knowledge of, you know, how guns work,
the velocity
and sharpshooting
of bullets
and all that
and so
kind
on.
Of thing. Mm. Perhaps one of the most well-known 9/11 conspiracy theorists is a professor of the philosophy of religion. one of the famous Kennedy conspiracy theorists was someone whose most famous work was a book on the history of philosophy. So I think a lot of people who write about conspiracies are people who get, you know, roped in and sucked in by them, but who don't actually have the kind of technical knowledge to resolve the questions that these theories raise.
Isn't that very interesting? I had no idea about that. I mean, they cite footnotes, don't they? And they cite studies, but yet you say they have a disdain for the experts, for the structural engineers.
Yeah, well, of course, they have their own experts. And I mean, it's not true that every single structural engineer in the world believes the official account of 9/11. Mm. Nevertheless, I think it is true that conspiracy theories and theorists go pretty much against the kind of establishment view, and they go against expert opinion in most cases, or at least majority expert opinion. So if you were to say to one of these conspiracy theorists, well, you know, what about all these official experts who say that your theories are rubbish? What about them? Of course, they say, well, they would say that, wouldn't they? Because they're just defending the official view, and we have our own experts who have a different take on these events. But if you really look into the issue, well, I mean, who are their experts? It turns out that the people that conspiracy theorists love to cite in their footnotes are other conspiracy theorists. So there's a kind of a tight circle of conspiracy theorists who cite each other and sort of try to give the impression that what they're doing is serious scholarship, when actually it isn't, right? Because they don't, you know, their work isn't subjected to any of the normal procedures of scholarship, like peer review, for example. They never get their stuff published in peer-reviewed journals. They get their stuff published in journals edited by other conspiracy theorists.
And do certain,
so I think they give a false impression.
Do certain types of events attract conspiracy theories, like, say, the death of Princess Diana or 9/11? Are they generally based on violence?
Yes, they are. The sorts of events that attract conspiracy theories tend to be significant political events, I would say, but not always. I mean, the theories we've been looking at discussing so far are you know, the kind of big ticket conspiracy theories, like 9/11 conspiracy theories. But then there are also much weirder ones. I don't know if you remember, but in the last American presidential election, there was the Pizzagate conspiracy. Now, in the case of the Pizzagate conspiracy, it wasn't as if there was some kind of major event involving violence about which people were constructing conspiracy theories. I mean, the Pizzagate conspiracy theory was a theory that Hillary Clinton and a guy called John Podesta were running a child sex ring from a pizza restaurant in D.C. Now, that is not a theory based on any kind of scholarship. It's not. It doesn't even pretend to be a kind of scholarly theory. And it's not a theory about any actual event. It's completely made up.
Well, in fact, interestingly, you say that there's right and left wing conspiracists, say anti-vaxxing from the left about Big Pharma.
Yeah.
And then you've got your more typical that 9/11's an inside job about Bush needing an excuse to invade Iraq. So you move in your very good philosophical sense to who then tends to believe these conspiracies? Is there such a thing as a conspiracy-minded person?
Well, that's certainly what the psychologists think. So the psychology of conspiracy theories is now quite a large field. So psychologists think that there's something called a conspiracy mentality, which is a kind of personality trait that some people have and other people don't have. If you have this conspiracy mentality, then you're more likely to believe a conspiracy theory. So one of the big findings of psychology is that belief in one conspiracy theory makes it much more likely that you'll believe in further conspiracy theories. And so what the psychologists try to do is to say that, well, there's just this general kind of psychological tendency that some of us have to believe conspiracy theories. I mean, my own view is that while there might be something in that, I think it's really only it's only part of the story. I mean, if you think about anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, for example, which are very popular on the extreme right, it seems
well,
to me to
and
be
the
kind
left
of rather,
too, actually,
and the left. I mean, anti-Semitism has been, you know, has been absolutely the heart of conspiracy theories almost, you know, from the beginning. If you look at these theories, it seems to me odd to say that you know, the reason that someone believes in anti-Semitic conspiracy theory is that they have a conspiracy mentality. Because, you know, the question then would be, well, why? What's attractive to them about this particular theory among all the conspiracy theories that you could possibly believe? And of course, what's attractive to them about anti-Semitic conspiracy theories is that they fit in with their extremist, racist, ideological outlook. And that's not a psychological fact, or not mainly a psychological fact. I think it's a political fact.
Well, in fact, you do note that conspiracies find fertile grounds among extremists, but you also note that not everyone who believes them is an extremist. I mean, for instance, you say in the US, African Americans are more inclined to believe conspiracies about government behaviour because of historical precedent. And you've got a very interesting example of that, if you'd care to develop it, please.
Yeah, so it is one of the findings that African Americans in the States are more likely to believe conspiracy theories. And one explanation for this is that they have, in fact, been the victims of conspiracies much more than other communities. So there's a particularly notorious case of the Tuskegee syphilis study, where a group of very poor African American sharecroppers were used without their knowledge in a study of the effects of syphilis. And at some point whilst this study was happening, they discovered how to treat syphilis. But because they needed these people in the study, they didn't treat them. So they were allowed to continue and with syphilis without being treated.
It's quite unbelievable. Now, of course, it is almost unbelievable that it's so depraved, I think.
It's a staggering thing, yeah. And I think that, listeners who aren't familiar with this story should look it up. I mean, it's quite amazing. And actually, eventually, this all came to light because of a whistleblower. And Bill Clinton, when he was American president, actually apologized to officially on behalf of the government for this. Now, obviously, if your community has been the victim of this sort of thing, I guess you might be more inclined to believe that, well, there might be other
AIDS is being used to actually
So that's one factor, definitely. I think the real message of the book is that, although all this stuff about the conspiracy mentality and character traits, although those are interesting considerations, conspiracy theories, I think, are first and foremost political. I mean, they're basically forms of political propaganda that are there to advance a political cause. And I think that, the fundamental reason why people believe conspiracy theories is that the theories they believe fit with and promote their own political, ideological outlook.
But who starts them?
And that isn't... Well, now, that's a really fascinating question. So, I mean, I think when one talks about conspiracy theories, I think it's helpful to distinguish between... the people who produce them, who start them, who initiate them, so you might call them producers, and then the consumers of conspiracy theories. Now, if you're looking at the producers, I think many of the people who produced, come up with these theories are people who are political animals who are doing it for clearly political reasons. Mm. If you think about conspiracy theories about high school shootings in the States, it seems absolutely astounding that in following some of these appalling incidents, there are people circulating stories on the internet saying that actually no one was killed in these killings and that all the supposed victims
were activists. I think that happened at Sandy Hook, didn't it?
Preschool. Exactly. 20 kids were killed, and what the conspiracy theorists said is that actually no one was killed. It was a false flag. Now, a question that you might kind of think about is, well, why would anybody want to say that? I mean, it seems such an absurd thing to say. Why would they want to put that theory about? There is a fairly obvious explanation, which is that, if you're trying to preempt calls for greater gun control as a response to these events, then one thing that you might say is that, well, these events never happened. So in answer to your question, who puts these theories forward? I mean, in that case, it would be people, I think, who were very much against gun control. In the case of the Pizzagate conspiracy, well, who put those theories forward? Well, people who were trying to undermine the Clinton run for the presidency. So in all of these cases, I think there's a political motive.
Can I ask you something that I don't think you cover in your book? Because you do make the point that they do seem to be particularly fertile or hit fertile ground in the US and the Middle East. Does public broadcasting make any difference? Does that play a role at all in terms of encouraging people to explore and rigorously test some of the theories that do emerge in just the hurly-burly of day-to-day life?
Well, I think that there's public broadcasting of the sort that you get from ABC and BBC and organisations like that, and then there's the internet more broadly, the online world more broadly, and I think that as far as kind of respectable public broadcasting is concerned, it certainly has a role to play in actually questioning these theories and asking the difficult questions. Mm. Whereas if you're thinking about the online world more broadly, I mean, the problem there is that it's a complete free-for-all. And it's very hard to say that, these theories are ever really subjected to serious critical scrutiny there.
But it also does bring in, though, these very interesting terms that are pretty value-laden that you do introduce, whether people are gullible or suggestible or susceptible. Yeah. And this goes to this whole question of sort of character. Now, have you formed a view on certain types and whether they're more prone?
Well, I myself would want to say that you would have to be fairly gullible to really seriously believe something like the Pizzagate story, you know, or Sandy Hook conspiracy theories. I mean, that seems to me to be fairly clear. The problem, however, with making a big deal out of that is that the traits that, you know, that you attribute to conspiracy theorists are exactly the traits that they attribute to their opponents. You know, so if you say, well, you're gullible for believing this conspiracy theory, they'll say, well, you're gullible for believing the official view. So it doesn't follow that, you know, they're right or that you're right. It just means that arguing at that level isn't really going to get you anywhere, because, you know, it isn't as if you can really make the case that the conspiracy theorists have these traits uniquely and that no one else has them. That doesn't seem plausible.
Well, look, you head towards the end. It's very, I think, precise and quite discerning sort of prescription for where we head next. Because you say that you fundamentally want to say that we must keep tackling conspiracy theories, that we mustn't just give into them, in a sense, because they are harmful. That's your ultimate judgment. And that, in effect, that you use emotions like shame and embarrassment to alert people that they might be becoming prone to conspiracy theories. What's the logic here?
Well, I think the logic is something like this, that if you have a kind of straightforward argument with somebody about, you know, the merits of a particular conspiracy theory, I mean, what you'll find, I'm sure you have found this, is that you actually end up getting nowhere. You never really kind of get to a point where you can agree on these things. So I think it's just much better to approach conspiracy theories and theorists in a much more roundabout way, which is really not to focus on the kind of already deeply committed conspiracy theories, but to focus on people who are maybe just curious about them or who think there might be
playing
something in
them.
But who aren't yet true believers. And to say to these people, look, before you pursue this, before you get into these theories, why don't you actually learn something about the history of these theories? Why don't you learn about something about the way that these theories have been associated with extremist causes? Why don't you learn about the role of anti-Semitism in the history of conspiracy theories? And once you learn about those things, what you'll realize is that by playing with these theories and maybe promoting them and presenting them as if they, you know, they might even be true, you're really kind of affiliating yourself with these various political causes that conspiracy theories try to promote. And then you should really be asking yourself the question, do you really want to be associated with these causes? I mean, do you want to be associated with a conspiracy community which contains, you know, large numbers of political extremists and anti-Semites? I'm not saying all conspiracy theorists are like that, but many of them undoubtedly are. So instead of a kind of straight argument against a particular theory, what I'm recommending is, you know, what you might call the outing of the politics of conspiracy theories, and actually just drawing the politics to people's attention.
Rebuttal, education, and outing, as you say, and in effect, inviting them to feel slightly ashamed that they're even flirting with these theories.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, one of the worst things, I think, is this idea that, well, even if these theories are false, they're harmless. So actually focusing on the harms they do is really well worth doing. You know, so anti-vaxxer conspiracy theories have led to a catastrophic decline in the number of children being vaccinated against serious illnesses. And that's bad. You know, that's a real social harm that's been done by these anti-vaxxer theories. And then you look at the way that these theories have been used to denigrate particular communities or to marginalize particular communities, like the Jewish community. That's a serious harm that these theories have always done and continue to do. I think it's just really important that people who are flirting with these theories really think about the fact that these theories actually matter in practice. They affect people's lives, and they affect people's lives in ways that are, you know, in many cases really, really bad. I mean, people have died as a result of false conspiracy theories.
Look, it's a good read, I must say, and you argue your case well. No doubt we'll be flooded with all the people who critiquing you, but that's good. Thank you very much indeed for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks very much.
Dr. Kazim Kazam. He's a professor of philosophy at the University of Warwick, and his book is entitled Conspiracy Theories.